When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com. Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times. Our podcast is brought to you by our friends at the Operating Engineers Local 139, Madison Teachers, Madison Firefighters, Madison Teamsters, all the great union brothers and sisters in our area. All right, Comrade Nichols, this is how Morning Joe started out Wednesday morning, the day after the debacle in Wisconsin.
They gave us the PPE. It's mandatory to wear it. So we are here today making sure that we do everything safely. I think it's a testament to the people who have really thought about this election. They knew what they were doing. They worked really hard to make sure that everybody who is here, the ones who are at the poll place working, the people who are coming in their cars, everybody is here safe. They have very minimal exposure. Actually, there's less exposure here than you would get if you went to the grocery store or you went to Walmart. You can come to a polling place and do it safely. You have the ability to do curbside voting just like they're doing here, even if it's in a different municipality without drive-up voting. You can request that the person come out. They'll deliver you a ballot. They'll check your ID. You are incredibly safe to go out.
What a clown. That actually is the Republican Speaker of the Wisconsin State Assembly in full-on protective gear. This guy who looks like he's in a hazmat suit telling Wisconsin voters that they were, quote, incredibly safe to go out. What an absolute clown. Mika, of all the things
that I've seen in my
25 years of politics and being associated with politics and reporting on politics, I don't know that I've ever seen anything as reckless and irresponsible with the public health is what I saw yesterday, where Republicans jammed down the throat of Wisconsin voters an election in the middle of a pandemic where they had to stand in lines close to each other. And yes, you can say this, the Republicans that jammed this election through risked the lives of countless Wisconsin voters and those in other states. This is, after all, Meek, if you want to know what this is about as we look at these pictures, this is about a Wisconsin legislature and a Wisconsin Republican Party in Wisconsin that has spent the last decade doing everything they could do to twist and distort the voting outcomes in elections.
There's not much more to say, is there?
I got to say, it's a little frustrating to me when a former conservative Republican congressman...
from the panhandle in Florida.
Yeah, who I think, if I'm not mistaken, was part of one of the big Republican waves back long ago.
1994.
Yeah, and you know, part of the Gingrich thing, the whole bit, would, you know, say exactly what I would say. And in a weird way, it's like, that's what's happened here in Wisconsin. We're talking a little bit about the circumstance in Wisconsin where Governor Tony Evers tried to get the Republican legislature to work with him on some sort of rescheduling or restructuring of the election to make sure people didn't have to vote in person. They refused to cooperate, so then he tried to shut down in-person voting on Tuesday, April 7th, go to, you know, full-on absentee voting and stretch it out a little bit. Courts blocked them. People had to go do it. So that's the backstory on all this. But the interesting thing that I keep trying to point out to folks is we were the only ones who did that. The Democrats and Republicans in other states said, we can't go ahead. It's madness. It's literal madness. We're not supposed to do mass gatherings. We're supposed to shelter in place. We're supposed to avoid risky circumstances. I mean, Governor Mike DeWine in Ohio did exactly what Evers did on a tighter timeline, by the way. Governor Larry Hogan in Maryland did, on a better timeline, better arranged, what Evers did. Governor after governor after governor.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but Mike DeWine, as much as I disagree with him politically, is actually a very decent human being.
Well, no, I'm going to separate it another way. It's fine.
Well, don't you agree that he's a decent human being?
I covered him for, that's why I was a newspaper editor in Ohio.
Right.
I'm not disagreeing on decency. I'm going to talk about it another way. Republican leaders who have spines, who got into politics maybe quite a while ago and did so because they actually thought they could win elections fairly, are generally doing the right thing in the states, not in Washington. Republican leaders who have developed a habit of trying to win elections by cheating have now become so addicted to that behavior, so addicted to, you know, gaming the system with gerrymandering, you know, over-the-top voter ID laws,
okay,
to limit early voting, so addicted to it that when they were faced with a public health crisis, they couldn't do the right thing.
All right. So here's James Carville last night on Brian Williams' show on MSNBC.
Mucking around with his voting, and they're going to try it because Trump, everybody, all Republicans admitted we can't win if everybody votes. And so my kind of mission here in the short term is to sound the alarm to say Mitch McConnell and the Supreme Court, they're going to do everything they can to hold on to power. And Speaker Pelosi and Leader Schumer, we got to dig in and make sure these states have funding to conduct these elections and to put pressure on them to make sure they're done fairly. This thing in Wisconsin was one of the most awful things I've ever seen in my life. You know, just go here, the extent that what they will go to hold on to power. And it was all about one Supreme Court seat in Wisconsin. They will kill people to stay in power, literally. Mucking around with his voting, and they're going to try it because Trump, everybody, all the Republicans admitted we can't win if everybody votes. And
don't always agree with James, but he's spot on there.
Well, Bernie Sanders said last night on an interview he was doing that in all of his time in politics, remember, Bernie Sanders started in politics in 1971, started running for office.
That's a couple years back.
Yeah, almost 50 years. So in all his time in politics, he had never seen anything as ugly as what happened in Wisconsin. And, you know, I don't agree with Carville very often. And one thing I can tell you, Carville and Bernie Sanders pretty much never agree, right? They are really different figures within whatever the Democratic Party and its extended family is. The fascinating thing is people who've been around politics for a long, long time were among the most horrified by this. And the reason they were so horrified is because they were not because of what happened. It was awful. They were seeing a vision of the future. They were seeing the next politics. And the next politics is, you know, really stepping across a line that most people never thought you'd step across, right? That you would put people's lives at risk to win an election.
I mean, they don't even care if there's collateral damage, because the truth is they also put some of their own voters' lives at risk.
It's fine. It's fine. I'm going to guarantee you. You know, it's sort of like it often happens, you know, in situations like this, that, you know, people are passing a law that they think is going to be a good law and stuff like that. And then the first person that gets dinged by it is the person they're trying to protect, right? Or somebody they're trying to protect. That happens a lot. And I have no doubt, although I pray it's not the case, I have no doubt that many of the people who come down with coronavirus, some sort of variation on it, in the next few weeks will be people who went to cast a Republican ballot, right?
Have you seen the picture, and I have no idea the political identity of this couple, but have you seen the picture that Senator Tim Carpenter from Milwaukee posted of the elderly couple that went to South Division High School, both in their upper 80s, the man with an oxygen tank, and they had to climb two flights of stairs to vote?
Oh, I got a better story. Oh, I shouldn't say that. There's no. We don't.
Well, this isn't a competition, John.
No, I know. I've got a similar story, okay? Woman I talked to interviewed a lot of people on Tuesday about voting. There's a woman over in Milwaukee, north side of Milwaukee. She's a banquet manager who's laid off, so she's at home without a job. And she's in her 40s. Her dad is in his 70s and has chronic bronchitis, which is, you know, of course, you understand that's That's like the worst circumstance you can have. But her dad taught her to vote, right? And so they had planned to go vote. But then, of course, as the things got worse, they decided to do an application for an absentee ballot. And each day, she and her dad waited for the absentee ballots. Every day, they waited, and they waited, and they waited. And it got to be Monday night, and it hadn't come. And so they literally, like people make a plan for an emergency escape, right, or something like that. They made a plan to go vote, and they said, but maybe the ballot will come tomorrow, right? So they waited, didn't come. So they got homemade bandanas, and they went in the car. They did the curbside voting at Riverside High School. To the credit of Riverside High School and other places, they did curbside voting. But even curbside voting took more than a half hour. You had to sit in a line in the car.
Mm-hmm.
They did. They got their votes cast, and her dad was driving. And as they drove away, she got one of those I voted stickers. She's had gloves on, I think. Put it on her mask and took a picture of herself with her middle finger extended and sent out on social media, FU Wisconsin GOP.
Have you seen The Onion with the tombstone?
I did, with the I voted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the reason I tell that story and why, you know, you tell this Onion thing is, we got a twofold thing going on here. We have these incredibly resilient Wisconsinites, brave, bold people. In this case, a great many of them older folks, people of color, people who are in neighborhoods where the coronavirus is at its most serious level in the north side of Milwaukee, who see a duty to vote as something fundamental, as something that they know a history of fighting for it. And they know, especially in this state where there's been so many efforts to do voter suppression. And so they cannot overcome their sense of duty, as that elderly couple you talked about going up those steps. And there are some folks who will say, some of our, you know, I don't call them friends anymore. I'm a little ill at ease with them. But some of our Republican acquaintances will say, well, yeah, but people did go out and vote, right? They went and did it. They had that opportunity, and they went and did it.
They're kind of missing the point.
Well, that's it. When I talked to the people who were going to vote, they were people who had been put in a terrible circumstance, and they had chosen their faith in democracy, and they'd tried their hardest to protect themselves, but they were forced by their government to choose between the prospect of getting a virus that could kill them, in some cases very, very vulnerable people, guy on an oxygen tank, a guy with bronchitis. And, you know, we sane people, can have two ideas in our head at the same time. We can honor those who went out to vote for their courage and their commitment, and at the same time, we can be furious with those who forced them to go vote.
So, much like when somebody leaves the Church of Scientology, they speak the truth about what has happened in the cult. Listen to this man, and I'm pretty sure you're going to recognize his voice.
They gave us the PPE. It's mandatory to wear it. So we are here today making sure that we do everything safely. It made no sense to cancel the election and just push it off to a future date. You are incredibly safe to go out.
So what if you have to talk about an election while wearing personal protective gear? The Republican Speaker of Wisconsin State Assembly wore that hard to come by personal protective equipment today while at an election site. Our resident Wisconsinite Charlie Sykes writes this, quote, "What's happening in Wisconsin is a dry run for what's coming for the rest of the country in November. Elections roiled in partisan rancor, dysfunction, voter suppression, and questionable legitimacy." Here for more tonight, two of our returning veterans, the aforementioned Charlie Sykes, founder and editor-at-large of The Bulwark, and the author of How the Right Lost Its Mind, and Eugene Robinson, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for The Washington Post. Charlie, walk us through your fear that this is all of our futures.
Well, first of all, that video you had of Robin Boss, he is the legislative leader of Republicans in the state of Wisconsin. I've known him for years, but that video is an instant classic where he's standing there in all the protective gear saying, there's nothing to worry about, it's perfectly safe. This is George Orwell meets Animal House meets The Onion. And I'm not sure that it conveyed the message that he had here. Look, what we're seeing here is the partisan divide. If anybody thought that there was going to be this moment, this kumbaya moment, where Republicans and Democrats would say, this is a serious problem. We absolutely have to protect our democracy. We must protect the integrity of the vote in the midst of a pandemic. If you thought there was going to be a coming together, I think Wisconsin is a rude awakening, because the Republicans have drawn a line in the sand. And I think you're going to see that on a national basis. You hear it from Donald Trump, that they are not open to the possibility of making it easier to vote other than in person and the mail-in voting. I mean, look, you know, in Wisconsin, think about what happened here. We have a city, our biggest city, Milwaukee, has 300,000 registered voters. It normally has 180 polling places. Today, it had just five. Green Bay, Wisconsin, had only two polling places. More than 100 municipalities couldn't have find enough poll workers to even open the ballots. And yet you saw these scenes of Wisconsinites, of Americans, who were forced to choose between doing their civic duty, participating in their democracy, or protecting their health. It really is a dystopic moment. And I hope people understand what the implications would be if, in fact, this took place during a presidential election.
So there's the guy that we battled through so many years of Wisconsin politics.
Okay, I forgive him. You know, although, you know, yeah, one of the things he didn't say is he said, I've known Robin Voss for many years. He empowered Robin Voss. And so I respect, especially, you know, I especially respect what he's doing now and taking it apart. And this is the truth. No honest player who, or even minimally honest, what am I saying? You know, no hack who has an ounce of decency in him would defend what happened on Tuesday. It's not defensible. Nobody loves politics would defend what happened on Tuesday. No one who likes, you know, the theater of the fascination of the all the things about politics that you and I, Kip Sly, have spent our lives talking about and commenting on and being fascinated by, still waiting for election results even from Tuesday. Nobody could approve of what happened on Tuesday, because it wasn't trying to win a battle of ideas, which, you know, to Charlie's credit, he always tried to do, and I think continues to try and do. Nobody who even likes the, you know, kind of the sport of it could approve of a situation where you tell elderly people in a place like Milwaukee, get on a bus. It's, you know, 6 a.m. You know, ride through a town that's experiencing a coronavirus pandemic moment where you have disproportional levels of death in the African-American community, where people are, in fact, dying a lot. And, you know, go to a polling place you've never cast a ballot at before. Get in a line that stretches out of that polling place, down the street, around the block, and for 3 or 4 more blocks, and wait for 2 or 3 hours to go and cast a ballot when none of it had to happen.
We'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SlysOffice.com.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
And we're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works, also the law firm of Gingras, Thompson, and Walks. All right, Bernie Sanders has dropped out of the presidential race, at least in formality, although his name will be on the ballot. This is from ABC.
Bernie Sanders dropped out today, telling supporters victory was, quote, virtually impossible.
I wish I could give you better news, but I think you know the truth.
Sanders' path to the nomination had become increasingly unrealistic ever since Joe Biden's big Super Tuesday comeback. And as the coronavirus crisis grew, so did the question.
This feels a little bit like it did when you didn't come out when Hillary Clinton was clearly the person folks were going for. So can you explain why you're still in the race and what this path is that you see?
One of the reasons, that's not quite accurate, I worked as hard as I could to for Hillary Clinton.
Today, Sanders gave in.
I cannot, in good conscience, continue to mount a campaign that cannot win and which would interfere with the important work required of all of us in this difficult hour.
Now, Joe Biden is already looking ahead. Today, he announced he will have a plan in place to vet potential running mates by the end of this month. Asked if he would consider announcing his pick in June after the last primaries are held, Biden said that's not a bad idea.
All right. A lot of people on Facebook yesterday quite upset, quite distraught, and there were some Sanders supporters that were mad at him. One woman said, I went out and voted for him yesterday, and then he quit a day after, and, you know, my vote hasn't even been counted yet. Your reaction to Sanders dropping out now, was Wisconsin the final nail in his coffin as far as the things that transpired?
A couple things. First, I would say to that, to the person who went and voted for him yesterday, or 2 days ago, I voted for him. Dave Zwiefel voted for him. We wrote about it in the Cap Times.
Sly voted for him.
Yeah, we all said we were going to vote for him. I'm proud I did. I think it was the right vote to cast. And it will be counted. It is possible that Wisconsin will send Sanders delegates to the Democratic National Convention. The reason he suspended his campaign rather than closed it down is so that those delegates will have a voice at the Democratic National Convention. I'll go further. I'll say that I anticipate that Bernie Sanders will continue to win delegates in states that vote into June. Those delegates will form a bloc at the Democratic National Convention that will advocate, I think respectfully, thoughtfully, for the positions that Sanders is advocating for, which are more radical, but I think also more appropriate in many cases than those of the, you know, so-called mainstream of the Democratic Party. And so... I don't think anybody wasted a vote, and I don't think people who will continue to cast votes for him in that spirit of trying to move the Democratic Party toward the bold responses to the crisis we are in are wasting votes. I had talked to Sanders late last week for better part of 2 hours, and did a big thing for the nation with him. It was a fascinating thing. We could have talked about anything. I've asked a lot of questions and that. But his focus was relentlessly on the coronavirus pandemic. Finally, after about better part of an hour talking, I did say, well, we got to talk a little bit about the election. And it was like two paragraphs of words. You know,
Was this an interview?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's transcripts on the Nation website.
Okay.
It was fascinating. He did say, you could tell, he was saying, you know, he's assessing, blah, blah, blah. Instead of saying, yeah, we're boldly going on, he was clearly communicating that he was in a point where he was wrestling with the issue. And it wasn't, I would invite people to read it. He talked about the deep frustration in this moment. And he said, look, if it was just the economic crisis, I would be barnstorming across Wisconsin right now. And I would be saying, this is the time we have to step up. He had all these ideas. He's got ideas like you wouldn't believe. And I'd be popularizing these ideas, and we would make something happen. We'd have a grassroots campaign that would be stronger than ever. You know what I mean? He was there. But he said, I can't do that. I'm in my study in Burlington, Vermont. I can't even touch my grandchildren. Because he's, you know, obviously had a heart challenge earlier and stuff like this. He said, you know what I mean? You could feel the frustration in the man, but you could also recognize the realism of the moment that is here. And so I think his exit, I'm not trying to defend everything about it. He had gone on, I think, you know, in a sense, I think that it was very similar what he did, suspending or going on without the ability to physically campaign or even to frankly raise money, because his money, I believe his campaign has gone over largely to raising money for charity. You know, at the end of the day, he communicated a desire to continue fighting. he chooses to fight primarily, I think, as a senator, but with the platform that he has. I know that some people are deeply frustrated, but at the end of the day, I don't think anybody could have listened to him as I did and talked to him as I did and miss the sense of urgency that he felt about this crisis.
All right.
He really does. You know, remember, he is the last president of the United, or last candidate for president of the United States, you know, who was, you know, kind of grew up with, and I know Biden's the same age, but who really grew up with that sort of activist spirit of the 60s in a much deeper sense. And I think he feels a moral responsibility. You know, the moral responsibility is somebody who was literally there marching at the March on Washington in 1963 to kind of see the big picture. And I think that's the choice he made.
I'm fascinated by the reaction from people because, you know, I strongly supported Sanders in 2016 and in 2020, but I've been preparing myself for a long time for this moment. And I want him to keep fighting for the party's platform. But frankly, I'm ready to support Joe Biden and happy to do so. I agree with him on 80% of the things and very disappointed in the 20% that I don't, but I can live with that. I know that Trump is an existential threat to the democracy that we live in, and I feel quite comfortable. For other people, John, it's a very different reaction. Some are saying never. They'll never vote for Biden. I think that's a small group of people, but for others, they're literally heartbroken. And I'm wondering, does that make me just a cynical person? Does that make me a more superficial, cynical person? Because I'm committed to the things Bernie supports, and yet, I don't know, I've been around politics for a long time. I can't deny that more people, rank-and-file Democrats, came out and voted for Joe Biden, and I'm willing to live by that.
Well, I think there's a subtlety here. You and I have been through the Wisconsin experience, and many of the people listening to this podcast have been through the Wisconsin experience of the last 10 years. And so we've kind of been through this amazing political journey of our state where 10 years ago, I think there were a lot of people who said, you know, Democrats, Republicans, Democrats are better on a lot of issues, but, you know, they remembered when Tommy Thompson was a relatively moderate Republican governor. And they just said, you know, it's not that big a deal. You know, and if you don't like a Democratic nominee, you can, you know, maybe stand down, right? And what happened in Wisconsin after the uprising of 2011 and around all the events related to it, Walker's assault, not just on public education, public services and unions, but on voting rights, I think caused an awful lot of people to recognize that there are which side are you on moments. And, you know, yeah, maybe you can see all the subtleties and the gray areas, but at the end of the day, you have to stand on one side of the line or the other side. And does that mean you may have to back people you don't like? Yeah. And so, to my mind, I think a lot of people are going to wrestle with the reality of Biden. And if they wrestle with it and say, you know, boy, I'm not sure he's the best candidate, and, you know, whatever that, wherever that takes him, I understand that. But at the end of the day, if that's the choice you've got, I tend to be closer to where Dr. Cornel West is. Now, Dr. West has often split with the Democratic Party over the years. And he was one of Sanders' most effective surrogates during this campaign. Remarkable moral figure who channels a lot of, you know, kind of uncompromising spirit. And somebody asked him yesterday, you know, kind of where are you at on this? You know, what do you think? Sanders is out. And he said, I have to be part of the anti-fascist resistance.
Well, amen. Compare this to 2016. I feel a lot better about voting for Joe Biden than I do Hillary Clinton. That was a more contentious race. I don't know how different Clinton and Biden are as far as policies, but in general, as a human being, I'm more comfortable with Joe Biden because I think in general, he's more honest than she is. I always have found her to be very, very manipulative and dishonest.
Let me offer a stark assessment.
Well, so...
Okay, go ahead.
So what do you make of that assessment?
Let me offer a stark assessment here.
Okay.
I've interviewed both Biden and Clinton.
Uh-huh.
One-on-one, Clinton's probably a little more personal than Biden, interestingly enough, but she never was that good at communicating it in the broad sense. Both Biden and Clinton have awful records on trade and awful records on a lot of issues, war and peace, civil liberties. I mean, I'm, you know, pretty disappointed with a lot of stuff on both of them. Biden has a skill when he's at his best for communicating an empathy for blue-collar workers, for working-class people. Now, the truth is Hillary Clinton had experiences and could talk about that. I've interviewed her where she talked about it very well, but she never, in my opinion, was that effective at doing it as a candidate for whatever reason. Now, one last thing I'll say is I actually think Hillary Clinton probably would be better prepared for this moment than a lot of other candidates, perhaps even Joe Biden. But Joe Biden may be better prepared to win the election. You understand what I'm saying?
I do. Well,
and
let me ask
so
you.
I think that's where.
Yeah. So let me ask you this.
Level comes.
It is my understanding that the Biden campaign and the Sanders campaign have been working together to find a way to unify the party, and that Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden have a much better relationship than Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders.
Interestingly enough, Sanders had a decent relationship with Clinton. I mean, it's very interesting. Unfortunately, the bitterness of some of the Clinton strategists in 2016 led to this sense that Sanders somehow was, you know, this lie, frankly, that suggested Sanders didn't throw in for Clinton. In fact, he campaigned incredibly aggressively for Clinton and did the work, right? But I do think that some of those struggles over 2016 may have strained that relationship. At the end, I believe Hillary Clinton will strongly back Joe Biden, and I think that Bernie Sanders will strongly back Joe Biden. I do think that Sanders' motivation is a different one, and I won't speak for him fully. I mean, he'll do more of this as it goes forward. But he really is about ideas and movements to a greater extent than probably anybody I've seen in politics. And so whether he liked Joe Biden or not, I don't think matters a bit. I don't think it matters at all. I think that,
you know,
Bernie Sanders will come there with a how are we going to do this sensibility? And Biden, to his credit, I believe will welcome that. and they'll get to a point where, in my opinion, Bernie Sanders will make Joe Biden a better candidate.
I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay.
In that I do think how they interacted with each other on stage and how they talk about one another, I think it conveys a message to people and sends a signal. I understand Bernie's motivation, and I understand he's a movement politician, and thank God he is. He's going to have a much bigger impact on the Democratic Party and our politics than all these calculating politicians who were trying to pick the lock of being just the, you know, the Deval Patricks of the world that were trying to pick the lock. And I'm the porridge that's just right. He's going to have a much greater legacy. But I do think that people pay attention to the humanness of politics and how those two interacted with each other in public makes a difference to people and will make it an easier sell.
Let me, as long as we're riffing off each other. that's a great question, right? Are we in a situation, and that's going to decide the November election, by the way. Are we in a situation where people are still in the, I'm going to vote for the guy I'd like to have a beer with, or I'm going to vote for the person I think can actually save our country?
I'm just talking about bringing Sanders voters
along.
But
the thing is, there's a lot of people who are, you know, these realities all exist.
Yeah.
And here's where I think, I hope you're right. I hope you're 100% right. And I think there's an element of what you say. But I hope you're right for another reason. I hope their relationship is deep enough and respectful enough and consultative enough that they get to the core question of the 2020 election. And this is the interesting thing. Sanders knows it. I've talked to him about it. He understands it. The core question of the 2020 election is, if we come out of the crisis we are in, do we try to go back to where we were before, which is a comfortable thing, right? It sounds comfortable.
Well, that,
right?
that is a policy
right.
issue.
But it is a deep policy issue.
Right.
A fundamental one. Or do we try to, do we recognize everything we've been through and make sure that it never happens again? And already, our friend Scott Walker is out there pushing a balanced budget amendment and saying, you know, boy, we've spent
Who?
A lot of money.
Who?
Yeah. We've spent a lot of money. When we come out of this thing, we're going to have, you know, tight budgets and austerity. And you understand, that message is one, essentially, that we're going to torture the people, the frontline workers who are actually risking their lives to save
right.
them right now. We're going to torture them. And Biden needs to channel Sanders' fury at that.
I agree.
If he does, he'll get elected.
I agree. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to Sly's office.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.